Gray Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Gray Wolf Computer Systems offers a custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. It's Friday, April 30th, 2004, 10:04 a.m. on the central coast of California. It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name's Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on Geek Speak, avoiding online fraud. Scammers and spammers beware. Part of our April Home Security Month on Geek Speak, in the last segment of that segment of shows. During the second half of the show, I would welcome you to join our conversation. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Or you can go to geekspeak.org, click on the geeks, and then click on send a message. I'll be giving out that contact information again in about a half an hour when I invite your participation. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks John Tracy, owner and operator of FeltonGames.com, and Miles Elam, programmer of Java and C++ and C and a lot of other things, and of course, student of American literature. Welcome to Geek Speak, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Before we get into our discussion about protecting yourself from online fraud and scams and spams, let's do a little news. Miles, I'd like to start with you today.
As it turns out, the internet is spurring on attendance at public libraries. What they're finding is that libraries, which had been languishing for some time, I'm sure many of you remember a few years back about
pending closures.
Right, that the federal government was withdrawing funds and there was a whole bunch of talk about libraries not being useful anymore. Well, since computers have been finding their ways into libraries, and part from the help from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the same guy who runs Microsoft, what they've been finding is that attendance at libraries that didn't have computers, when they got computers, attendance went up by about 30%, and the level stayed there. It wasn't just a passing thing. It was, and what they're finding is that the increased numbers are mainly coming from teenagers, people over the age of 50, many more ethnic minorities, a lot of people who don't have the money or the will to have a computer in their house.
Or, in the case of my use on library, if I'm in town and I'm walking around, I'll swing by the library to do
right.
Surveying.
Right, it's cheap,
possibly.
It's easy, it's right there. It's making for a new gathering, or reclaiming an old gathering place.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Good story to mention. Thank you very much. And John?
Speaking of internet browsing, Cisco and IBM have created a new alliance together, designed to make your network closet a little slimmer. What they've done is they've integrated their...
For all those people out there that have
right,
network
closets. Right, for all those people who have network closets. It's cool if you're a networking geek.
Okay, cool.
Which you just happen to be.
Which I just happen to be. IBM came out with this new technology that uses blades. Think of you have a rack that you can slide these component blades into. They're like an inch tall, maybe a foot wide, and they slide in. And basically, it's a server that's very small. And then IBM makes this rack that a whole bunch of these can slide into. Cisco is now going to start making blades that slide into this IBM rack. So you can have all your networking components and all of your servers built into one small unit, which means you can now put these in smaller locations. So you no longer have to design buildings that have this giant server closet because everything will fit into a smaller package.
And server closets are quite expensive because you have to make sure that they're cold.
Yeah, you have to make sure that they're humidity and temperature regulated.
So the smaller the room, probably the better the function for that.
And the less power draw.
Right.
Which is also good.
Good. Thank you for that, John. And Miles, hi.
In addition to the tried and true stories of better living through chemistry, this is a better living through biology. What they've been, some folks have been trying to make post-it notes that don't fall off when they get wet, having a better adhesive.
I hate that. I always have to tape my sticky notes.
Because they get wet a lot?
No, because they just...
just fall off.
Yeah, they get humid and they fall off.
Well, a team from Germany and Switzerland have done some research on jumping spiders and the adhesive on their feet. and have discovered that the molecular force sticks the spider to almost anything. In fact, the spider can hold over 170 times its own body weight from this adhesive.
And this adhesive, what is it? Have they figured it out?
They have done research into it. They've identified the item.
The thing that doesn't work for me, then, I like to stick a sticky where I put it. I don't want it crawling around my desk. That's the thing. Or biting me. My God.
Yes. Thank you. They're not talking about actually putting spider paste on.
The idea of harvesting little spider feet just disgusts me, Miles.
Oh, whatever. Spiders.
But yes, now that reminds me of a great little story about finding that you can get the protein for spider silk and insert that gene or modify the gene inside goats and produce spider silk inside goat sacks. So there's a lot of this kind of looking at biology to solve problems.
Actually, I take it back. This is not actually a glue.
Okay. That's what I thought it was. Little fibers, right?
Yeah, little hairs.
I wasn't sure, and so I didn't want to attack you on it, but okay, yes.
Yeah, I'm totally remiss. I'm sorry.
It's physical.
Yeah, it's a molecular attraction, yeah. Mm-hmm. And
they have a massive amount of surface area.
Right, and so they're, the researchers are trying to find other ways of doing this. Basically, it's a non-glue adhesive.
Interesting. Cool.
Yeah, it's cool if you look at it. It branches at a molecular level. So basically, the molecules of the spider foot are intersecting with the molecules of the wall. So it branches down to the molecular level. You know, if you think of a tree that branches, it keeps going and going and going until you can't see it anymore. It's pretty amazing.
And so the molecules are very, like if you would say, very thin and small and can insert themselves into other substances.
Basically, it's almost like the molecular structure of the spider is inserting itself, joining with the molecular structure of the wall. Although not really, but it's about
that. Yeah, sounds cool. Kind of like what they have with geckos, the little hooks that are on the bottom.
Yeah, very similar to the gecko foot. John?
I've got a follow-up from an earlier news story we did 2 weeks ago about the iPods, the new iPod mini that Apple produced, giving out static when you listen to it.
Yeah.
Apple will fix this as a warranty issue, but hasn't actually released what the problem is. I did find a site where this person did figure it out. There's a small black connector that the headphones plug into. It wears out, and then it's no longer a really good connector. It's got it basically, there's a black part that breaks. There's 10 thin wires that join the connector to the motherboard is what you call it, of the iPod. And it creates a short because there's no longer an insulator where the connector breaks. So it creates a short. That's what's causing the static.
So what will they do? Will they replace
the motherboard of the iPod.
Wow. Yeah. With a new switch in it. Or a new plug in it.
Right.
I think it's fascinating to me that to fix a plug, because of the the very small sizes of surface mount equipment, you have to basically remove the board. That's the more cost-effective way to do it. Just toss that out and bring a new one in.
Right, because it's, like you said, it's 10 small, very brittle connectors that connect this jack to the board. So, if one of those breaks.
Now, I'm assuming that you could find the part number of that item in like a DigiKey catalog, go ahead and order it yourself, and very carefully desolder.
Everyone I've talked to does not advise opening up an iPod mini. They're even harder to open than the regular iPods, which are a big pain in the butt. So,
can you speak from personal experience?
I haven't opened mine up yet, although I'm about to replace the batteries. It's
another story on Apple having defects and problems. The new 15-inch aluminum PowerBooks. You and I both have titaniums, the earlier versions, but the newer versions of that have ghosting white spots on the screen in kind of a northeast, southwest kind of situation. And what that's caused by, and it does exist, and what it's being caused by are the standoffs on the back of the LCD, in between the LCD and the back of the aluminum plate. So if you do have that problem, I'm not sure if Apple's actually claiming that they will fix the problem, but it does exist. I saw it yesterday. It's pretty nasty, and be careful about buying an aluminum at this point, I think. Miles, another news story from you, sir.
Yes, U.S. may be backing the European Union's cybercrime treaty. U.S. is already a signatory to the Council of Europe's Convention on Cybercrime. However, it has not yet been ratified by the House and Senate. Now, this is a curious law, or treaty, I should say, that it would allow, it's basically for U.S. to, or U.S. law enforcement authorities to work with foreign law enforcement authorities with regards to cybercrime. This being, for example, an example I saw here was if you sell Nazi memorabilia on eBay, it's not against U.S. law to do so, but it is against German law. And so this treaty would allow German law enforcement authorities to wiretap you.
Yeah, that doesn't sound very good.
So
for doing a non-illegal thing.
Right. But and then I wonder, this also probably goes both ways. You have U.S. citizens spying on French and German.
We can get all those pot smokers in
Amsterdam.
In Amsterdam, right?
Well, except this is a cybercrime treaty. It's something that's on the internet, not something that's just available
laws. Only if you sell your reefers on eBay.
Only if you sell your reefers on eBay. Except I don't think it's
how do we divulge into this? This was me that caused me to join this conversation. I'm sorry. We should get out of that conversation. But this does mean that, theoretically, if this thing passed, the U.S. government would be able to extend the canned spam violations, spammer violations, into other countries that would be applicable to that, to spamming, right?
Except that I believe the European Union has more strict standards for spam, so I don't think it would really affect them all that much. However, it would affect the European Union affecting spammers in the U.S. where the laws aren't as strict.
Right, that's interesting.
So it would go the other way. The treaty also would require the U.S. to pass laws that force users to provide their encryption keys and the plain text of encrypted files.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
This is a treaty.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is an agreement between nations.
Wow. Wow, scary.
So if you have any thoughts on this, call your local senator and representative.
All right. We might have to have another follow-up on that. I'd also like to do a show on how to enable PHP for yourself to secure your own email. And make it totally
PGP.
PGP, thank you. PHP is something completely different. PGP, yes. I'm messing up on my TLAs today.
Speaking of acronyms.
Yes.
D&D, which is...
Dungeons and Dragons. I know that one.
Okay. Celebrated its 30th anniversary. It's been around for 30 years.
That's pretty exciting. It's the same age as me.
I started playing... Really?
Yeah.
Did you start playing when you were one?
No.
I started playing when I was 7, so I was 2 years old when I joined in.
Dragging teenagers and adults into the depths of hell for the last 30 years.
Well, they put a more positive spin on it than that. But yeah, basically that's...
Really? I can't imagine why. What
spurring devil worshipping? No, that was
what is the company that's owned D&D at this point? Who is that?
In the beginning, it was TSR. That's who created it. Currently, Wizards of the Coast, which is now a subsidiary of Hasbro Incorporated, is the current owners of Dungeons and Dragons.
And what are they doing for the 30th anniversary?
Let me see.
Mentioning it.
Yeah, they're trying to boost sales. It. My guess is they're coming out with the 30th.
You know, it's so interesting. This is not, you know, technical geeky stuff. This is still geeky stuff, though, wouldn't you say?
It's something geeks do, definitely.
Yeah. We actually had a show all on about role-playing games, because it's a pretty geeky activity. Thank you for that information about Happy Birthday D&D. Miles?
Thermoacoustic cooling. Yeah, who would have thought? Instead of using hydrofluorocarbons for refrigeration... or Freon, these things are detrimental to health and the environment. The ice cream manufacturer Ben & Jerry's has been sponsoring research into alternate ways of freezing to make better ice cream. And this was actually covered, I believe, by NPR, but they were using helium gas that has been subjected to ultra-loud, in other words, 173 decibel sound waves. And... contrary to what I would think, you know, you put waves, you know,
you put energetic
waves, you would end up heating it up, except that, as it turns out, you put these waves into it, and it calms the helium down, or puts them more into a accretion state. Yeah.
Huh.
So you end up cooling by sound.
Interesting. So you'd basically have helium, which is pretty inert. Actually, pretty much the definition of a nerd.
Yeah.
And you put that into your refrigeration system, and then you have somewhere that's like this really loud box, like AM radio or something, just yelling in there. And so
I think it would have to be specific frequencies.
Oh, okay, okay.
I don't know if Rush Limbaugh and AM really loud would help.
I'm wondering what the health and safety concerns of are a 173 decibel box.
Let's assume that it's encased in some kind of dampening field.
Isn't 90
well, from 90 decibels? I don't know, dampening field, but
because 90 decibels or higher is damaging to hearing.
Yeah, so you have a fridge, but forget about the noise of the compressor turns on when you hear this.
Yeah, And just as a side note, I'm pretty sure you wouldn't be able to use AM radio like with Rush Limbaugh, because he's all full of hot air. That would be... Ouch.
You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. The geeks this morning are John Tracy and the interesting Miles Elam. If you have questions or comments, the numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, those numbers... Well, first, the reason why you'd want to call. We can answer any call, kind of question you have. We're about to dive into a discussion about protecting yourself from fraud online. If you have any questions regarding that or any other questions you think that we might be able to help you with, please use these phone numbers, 476-2800, and that's in the 831 area code, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. That number works in California. You can also, of course, use the Internet. Go to geekspeak.org with your favorite web browser. Click on The Geeks, and then click on Send a Message. All right, back to news stories while we wait for the impending calls, unless you guys would like to jump into discussion about online frauds. Sounds good to me. All right, let's do some fraud. Miles.
Let's do some fraud protection.
Everybody call in and give your credit card numbers. Miles, you've had been collecting a little inbox, if you will, a little collection of fraudulent claims.
Right,
spams.
When a spam comes in that has a new way of delivering a virus or has some new type of social engineering that I hadn't seen before, I usually keep it just for posterity to keep
social engineering. Please tell me what that means.
Social engineering is basically you have, it's instead of some technical way of getting someone to put a virus on their system or execute a Trojan or whatnot, or to get rid of, give up their personal information. A technical reason being, for example, clicking on a link in an email or opening it up in...
Or just attaching your computer through some
right,
bug.
Writing an attachment. Mm-hmm. This is one that has some personal aspect applied to it to get you to do a particular action. Like,
so you're using social interaction to manipulate the user
right.
into doing
you're
something.
Making them think that there's some official business organization that that you have some ties with, or that it's an old friend, an old high school chum, or it's something to do with the bills that you have to pay. Or
right. So basically you're kind of... The social engineer is using some kind of method to entice you to participate in their scam.
Right, a fraudulent way.
And that's a big part of it. In fact, you mentioned the idea of clicking on an attachment, running an attachment. Well, that always is some kind of social
engineering. You'll tell people, don't click on the attachment. A lot of people would just, in the past, like 5 years ago, people would click on an attachment because they were just like, oh, I have an attachment that has my Word document, or
right.
that has a text document, or has an image. And people later learned, I'm hoping, people who have listened to this show anyway, have learned that you're not supposed to click on attachments unless you know for a fact that the person sending it to you was going to send an attachment to you.
Right.
That you're expecting it. But social engineering has aspects to it. Like, for example, one that I just came across the other day where it says... it was trying to pretend that it was a woman who was interested in me. That's the social engineering. It attaches an image that would show.
So you knew it was a spoof.
That
Thank
was so
you.
Mean, John.
I'm sorry.
I'm not going to tell your wife about that one. That was mean, John. Miles is single, by the way. His home phone number.
But what it does, it preys on people. I'm sure it would. The similar things are coming across for women as well.
You get an email and it has a picture of a beautiful person saying, "I'm interested in dating."
Right, it says, I saw your profile somewhere, or I saw you at a coffee shop and I got your email address from a friend, and some things like that, that gets you to say, oh, really? Oh, wow, someone's interested in me. And they show a picture and go like, hey, this person actually seems kind of attractive, and they say yes, and I have more information and stuff like that in the other attachment. So you click on the attachment, boom.
Right, and that's that feeling of responsibility to interact with the world around us. That feeling that ingrained mm-hmm. the reason why we're social creatures. That is used in almost all of the online hoaxes, and that's what it's about.
Right. Yeah,
it's
this
about
one's
manipulating
about
people.
This one's about loneliness.
Right.
You have other ones that are about, like we've covered in the show, things like, oh, hello, we're eBay, and we've lost your information. We need you to confirm it. Otherwise, we'll have to drop your account.
And John, you got
hours.
That one, and it almost worked on you because you're so dependent on eBay, because that's where you do most of your sales.
Right. And I was rushed, and I didn't notice it. Yeah.
Right. So it's a and it really is about that, and that's why it's crucial. when you're interacting with the internet to be wary, because there's bad people out there. We'll get into more detail about that in just a second. I want to mention that if you want to learn a lot more about social engineering and read a really interesting book, The Art of Deception by Kevin Mitnick. We had Kevin Mitnick on the show via phone in October 21st, 2002. And the audio archive of that is available at geekspeak.org. Just click on shows and then archives and go down to the very bottom and you'll see Kevin Mitnick's Art of Deception interview we did with him. A lot about social engineering and how he was able to, with little stories, take over, for example, the Las Vegas phone network. So we're going to go now to a phone call. Heidi from Palo Colorado Canyon. Heidi, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm hoping you can help me with a problem that I'm having with my printer. During the last storm, which was quite a while ago, we had down here a lightning strike that went through our phone line.
Ouch.
And it took out people's modems and phone machines and all kinds of things. And when
it would do that, that's right.
Yeah. So when I turned the computer back on the next day, I had the computer, but I couldn't make the internet connection.
Right, your modem probably got fried.
So right. So here's what happened is I took it into a shop and they put the modem in, and when I got it back, I haven't been able to get my printer to work.
Okay. Well, there's two things that could possibly... I'm assuming you're on a Windows machine?
Yes.
Okay. There's two things that could be going on here. One is that some hardware damage happened to your printer as well. That's a possibility.
Was your printer working?
Oh, no. I know that the printer worked. Well, let me just give you a little brief thing here. So I know that the printer worked because before I took it in, I ran the printer, and it printed.
So after the lightning strike, while you didn't have internet connection, you were able to print. Then you sent it in. They swapped out your modem. They gave you your computer back, and then your printer didn't work anymore.
Right. And I know that the printer works. I've been to the HP site. I've... tested it. I've tried a new cord. I've gone through all the...
Okay, I think we know what might have happened.
Okay.
Yeah. Who wants to go with this?
I'm guessing it's communication port.
Yeah, I was thinking the BIOS the port was turned off.
Yeah. Right. I'd agree with that, too.
Let's say
the BIOS necessarily.
Let's explain what that means to us.
Yeah, but first off, let's ask a couple questions. What operating system are you using?
Windows 98.
Okay. Are you using USB printer, or is this a big parallel connector printer? Does the printer, the connector that plugs onto the computer, does it look kind of wide about...
And trapezoidal.
Yes.
And trapezoidal?
Yeah.
Okay, that's a parallel port printer, most likely. All right. Miles, you want to attack this? In 98.
The thing is, it doesn't necessarily have to do with 98, I don't think. This sounds more like in the BIOS, someone had this... somehow the printer port was disabled.
See, I don't see why they would do that. My guess on this, Miles, and you can go ahead and correct me on this.
Well, let me tell you one thing. I get this message that says, error writing to LPT1, the perimeter is incorrect.
Okay, so LPT1 is theoretically your printer port, but it also could be your modem at this point, and that's one of the problems.
No, a modem would not show up as LPT1.
No, but it would show up as a collision with a... I'm thinking they set it up manually, the modem instead, they set it up manually, and they used a... Interrupt.
Your parallel ports are usually IRQ7, and the serial ports are usually IRQ3 and 4.
Who was it that did the installation for you?
PC people.
Okay, well, we'll get some bats and we'll walk down there. No, did you call them and ask them?
Yes, I did.
What did they say?
Well, they basically sort of want me to bring it in again, and I've talked to several people who said, well, when you put in a new modem, it has to be assigned to a port, and the printer has to be assigned to a port, and, that they're sort of basically responsible, and they haven't stepped up to the plate and said, we'll take care of it.
Okay,
unless a modem has specifically been configured to go on IRQ7, which is a very unusual place to put it, by the way, it's probably just the parallel port has been disabled in BIOS. It's like a two-second fix.
All right, so this is how you do it. This is Miles' guess. It's disabled in BIOS. What that means is when your machine starts up, before your hard drive starts interacting at all with the computer, there's a little bit of code that runs, and that's called the BIOS. And that kind of starts the computer, enables you to access the hard drive and all this. There's a lot of things you can do inside the BIOS of setting things off and turning things off. Miles thinks that port that your printer is plugged into has been disabled at that level, way up in the BIOS, right, the very first thing that happens. And the way you get into a BIOS on the machine is when the machine boots up, you'll see a display, and it should say something like settings or BIOS push F2 or something of that nature. What are some common
things? Hit delete.
Hit delete. in that first settings. And then walking through that is a total, it's going to be a total mess for you.
I don't recommend it for someone who is not familiar with it.
Yeah, so the second thing...
You don't necessarily need a guru for it, but someone who's done it before.
I would definitely take your computer back to these people with the printer and just stand there and look annoyed. Go, look, I've been going without this. You said you weren't going to help. I want to be supported by my support people. I paid you to support me, and you disabled my printer. I really want you to enable it. And I bet you anything, if you bring all those things in, they'll do it while you wait.
Right. I mean, because if it is a BIOS thing, it literally is less than 5 minutes.
Okay, so let me make sure that I can say this, repeat this, is that it is sort of what I said, is that the modem is assigned to a port, and the printer is assigned to a port, and it was done incorrectly?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
Miles' theory is that it actually doesn't have to do necessarily with the conflict of the modem, but that when they were doing that, for some reason, they disabled the parallel port. I think that's not accurate, but that's okay. And then so that's one option, is that it wasn't really a conflict. They just disabled something they should enable.
Okay.
You can tell them, can you make sure that the parallel port is enabled in the BIOS? That's one thing you want to say. The next thing you want to do...
Okay, parallel port enabled in the BIOS?
Yeah, BIOS. B-I-O-S.
BIOS.
Uh-huh. Stands for Basic Input Output System.
It doesn't matter.
Okay, wait. BIOS. The parallel port is enabled.
Enabled, yeah. On, basically, in the BIOS.
Okay.
That's one thing you want to check, or have them check. And if you've got a friend that's really good with computers, they can check for you pretty easily. The next thing you want to do, if that's not the case, is that there's some kind of conflict with the software, or the drivers, if you will, that are running your modem versus the printer. It's possible they did, like, have you tried installing the CDs?
Yes,
and stuff?
I have. I went to help, and I went through every single thing, and I've tried...
Is the printer plugged in?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Believe me, I've been through everything. Okay. And I reinstalled the driver. I tried. There's a little help section that says you can assign it to a new port. I tried doing that. I've been through everything.
I would go back to them.
Yeah, okay. For me, it's either the BIOS or the parallel port on your system is bad and needs to be replaced.
It's possible.
But I'm more inclined toward the former rather than the latter, considering you just took it to someone for repair.
Yep, I'd go with that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Heidi, for calling GeekSpeak.
Bye.
Bye. And we have David from Moss Landing. David, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello.
Hi.
This is going back to the security a little bit. I was wondering if anybody's read the science fiction author Stanislaw Lem there.
Our big reader's not here today, but I haven't.
I've read something from him. I don't know which particular novel you're asking about.
Well, Peace on Earth is the name of the novel, and the idea is that as we keep getting better and better with our technologies, it's like countries start using like cybercrime, and they can't tell who's fighting who, and there's kind of this level of artifice using social engineering techniques and things like that. And so what they end up doing is they send all the weapons to the moon and give them like this self-evolving ability, and people aren't supposed to be able to interact with them at all. But there's still going to be some kind of arms race going. But there's supposed to be no war on Earth. And so what ends up happening, obviously, is everybody gets really afraid of what's going on the moon, and so they send people there, and they go fall into the moon, and something happens, and we don't get to know, they send no information back.
So, David, what's your question?
Well, basically, it comes to what comes out of this evolution is basically a computer virus.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes back to Earth via the one astronaut that does make it and wipes out all of the solid-state computing.
Okay, so what's your question or comment?
Is that the ultimate goal of
virus writers?
Of virus writing, yeah.
Well, at this point, what you're talking about is an artificial intelligence being created that's, to some extent, superior to human intelligence. I think we're a long way off from that.
That or something from Terminator, where you have like Skynet or something.
But basically, that's an artificial intelligence that would exist. People have been trying to work on artificial intelligence for a while, and it's a pretty hard thing to do. The brain's a lot more complicated than we think it is.
If you're asking about the impetus for people to make viruses, like what's the reason for that?
Is that what you're asking?
Not so much. I think it could be done without artificial intelligence, in my mind. With it's at least all the Windows computers. They seem you could find at one time that they all have this certain security patch, and it just spreads like wildfire, and everybody's out of a machine.
Which does happen.
It does do that, but normally the viruses don't affect hardware. It's pretty rare for software to be able to damage hardware.
99.9% of all viruses and worms out there are someone saying, "Ooh, I wonder how many computers I can get onto."
Yeah.
Not so much intending to do a huge amount of damage, but or they have a particular point of ire.
Even the ones that want to do damage are talking about data damage, not hardware damage. So we're talking about the information damage. That's pretty much what viruses are limited to.
The point that was interesting to me about this book was that it wasn't considered, I mean, it wasn't sure. You couldn't say whether or not it was damage that was done. The name of the book was Peace on Earth. And so it actually brought peace to Earth in some way.
So the getting rid of computers would do that, assuming, right?
Of course,
we'd lose a lot of medical coverage, and we'd have starvation. And well,
yeah, but only the people nearest to you can hear you. So
I would assume that, in general, most of the viruses out here, you really don't have to worry about that much. It's not life-threatening. It's not a social-threatening situation. It's a little bit of loss of information or, worst extent, loss of communication for a period of time. But I think we're pretty safe. Thank you very much, David, for the call.
Yep.
This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Selkell Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. If you have questions or comments, the numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. This is Central Coast Public Radio KUSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks Miles Elam and John Tracy. This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing internet services including DSL, spam filters, PHP, MySQL, now with nationwide access. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. I want to get back to our conversation about detecting hoaxes and being a safe internet user. A big part of this is just being scrupulous.
Having a critical eye.
Yeah, scrupulous. Having a critical eye.
Well, and educating people, you know. I know for a long time one of the big problems on the internet was these forwarding petitions where, add your name to the bottom of this petition and forward it to everybody you know. Those don't work. If you get one, delete it, and please tell the person this doesn't work. And usually if you look for a key phrase in that petition, like there's an NPR one that goes around every once in a while saying,
right,
NPR's funding's been cut. If you don't sign this petition, it'll go away. It's a hoax. You can grab key phrases from that and do a Google search on those key phrases, and usually we'll find them in hoax sites.
Yeah, and add the word hoax to it. So, like, if you're kind of questioning, just put a bit of the sentence in there and then put the word hoax in there as well, and the page will probably show up that says, yes, this is a hoax, and it'll have the exact message that you got.
And if you're not sure, you can always go up to, there's a great site, www.urbanlegends.com. You can go up there and do a search. There's another great site called fsecure.com. /news/hoax. It's kind of the industry standard of hoax checking, and they've got it all. You can do a search, or you can do it alphabetically.
But the first thing you do when you receive any kind of message is just assume that it's wrong and fictitious and in error. That's pretty much what
that.
I do. I'm a pessimist email receiver. Miles, what's your thought?
Well, I guess in some ways I'm not necessarily a pessimist, but it's just a question of, does this, when I'm looking through my mail, I guess, is this a name that I know? Yes, it's good. No, it's bad.
Just the name?
In general, yeah.
Sometimes you don't know the name.
Or sometimes you get something from someone who's well-meaningly forwarding it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, here's this great get-rich-quick opportunity. Especially on the internet, if you ever get something that just seems too good to be true, it is too good to be true, and most likely it is a scam.
Yeah, if someone wants to give you huge amounts of money.
If you receive an email that's someone helping you, they're not helping you. That's pretty much how it works. Unless it's a friend. I mean, really, if you get any email that says, even something like, we're Symantec, we're a virus, antivirus protection software, and there's a bug on your computer you need to upgrade right now. Especially, that's a hoax. They're not going to do that.
And it can even come from support at symantec.com.
That's right.
Yeah.
So it really is.
Or
about,
seem to anyway.
It really is about being careful about what it is. And they're good at figuring out what your weakness is. For example, for Miles, it was, you know, someone interested in his profile online.
Oh, I did not actually even click on it.
I know you didn't. But let's think of another example of one of the hoaxes you've gotten, Miles. You also got one that was about from support.
Right. Some that have been coming through a lot lately have, strangely enough, come from saying, this is support at geekspeak.org. This is from the management.
Now, who does the management and support of the server geekspeak.org?
That would be you and I.
Uh-huh. So neither of us would send each other an email that said that.
Exactly. Not so much the fact that support at geekspeak.org does not exist as an email address. So it's... the thing is, I had also seen that earlier from another organization that I have ties to. And so, this is odd. It was a new type. It was something that just seemed very curt, very official. It didn't have any misspellings in it. It didn't have all the things that really mark usual spam, especially spam that comes from overseas. It was something that just seemed like a nice, quick, simple, yes, we're trying to do this, our mail server is going to be down, click on the attachment for details.
Right, so it seemed like a pretty clean, simple thing, and seemed like it was coming from the right people.
Right, and no reputable organization is ever going to send you an attachment unsolicited. Ever.
We are taking your calls. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can, of course, use the Internet. Go to geekspeak.org, click on The Geeks, and then click on Send a Message to ask us a question. Now, we do have a call offline, unfortunately, because we don't have... She is here. Good, wonderful. Julie, welcome to Geekspeak.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I was wondering, I don't know if this happens to other people, but I get a call, and it'll be like a few times, like any time of day or night, and it's a beeping computer. Mm-hmm. And it's not like a sales call where, you know, someone comes online, it just beeps.
It just goes...
No, it doesn't sound like a internet connection. I mean, it just is like a beeping. And I've heard that it's...
Can you give us the sample? Go ahead.
Well, it just goes beep, beep.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I've heard, and I get them, you know, periodically, like maybe once a month. And I've heard that people can call your phone, and if you're on the internet, they can connect up and get information off your computer.
No.
No?
They don't call your phone to do that, no. They do it through the internet, but...
Yeah, if you're dialed up through a modem to, like, say, Crusade or something like that, there's someone calls in on a separate line, like,
busy.
On a second thing. No. It's either busy or it sends a call waiting.
But when you are dialed into Crusade or some ISP that you're using, people can access your computer through that internet connection. That's
okay.
Probably what people are talking about. But your phone line is relatively safe. That beeping, though, sounds like a fax. I'm interested in sending a fax to you. Beeping tone.
Yeah, that's what made me think. But I usually think of faxes as when you call a fax machine that the receiver sends the tones.
When the fax machine picks up, what it will do is start going... And the earlier protocol of faxes, when the sender had to notify the fax machine that it was a fax coming in, and there was tonal usage on that. I think that's
right.
What that is.
Okay, so it's fax spam.
What's probably going on for you is that, this is my guess, some company that's close to your phone number gets a lot of faxes, and it's your number is a digit off, and people are just dialing it incorrectly.
Okay.
If you want to confirm that, go grab a fax machine, plug it in, and see what you get. And then you can contact the company that actually was the recipient of that fax and go, hey, and they'll go, sorry, not our problem.
Interesting.
I think that's probably what's going on is it's a fax machine.
Great, thanks.
You bet.
But I don't think you're in any danger from it.
No.
Oh, good.
Unless you start talking to it, in which case I would see a psychiatrist.
Thanks.
Thank you, Julie. We are taking your calls and questions and comments about anything. 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. I'll do that a little slower, I think. 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Julie's call was a perfect example of a call that makes sense to call us about. Go ahead and ask us about something strange that's happening on your phone. We might know the answer. We might be making it up, but we'll sound cool doing it, and that's the important thing. You can also go to geekspeak.org, click on The Geeks, and send a message. Back to hoaxes and such. The one thing that you need to be careful about, an adult can have that critical eye. It's built into us to some degree.
I believe it's learned.
We have to be skeptical. You know, we have to do that in our world. Because if someone comes up to you and says, oh, give me $10 and I'll give you my car, you're like, probably not so true. But children don't have that kind of filter. It does need to be learned. And John, you know a little bit about child online safety. And that has to do with the same kind of things we're talking about. So
yeah, children are especially vulnerable because they've often been told to do what adults tell them. And if someone says that they're an adult online, you know, there's no way you can tell. You don't know who they're chatting to.
Sorry about the spelling, right?
This is especially, yeah, well, no.
Maybe.
I know some adults.
Hey, back up. Go on.
So, mostly I'm thinking of IRC chat rooms, things like that. One of the biggest things that you can do is to talk to your children. If you see that your child is using Chat Relay, oh, that's fine. Chat rooms are really popular. It's a great way to get around, talk to people, meet people from around the world. It can be a great experience. All you have to do is teach your children a few basics, like don't give out personal information, meaning your name, the city you live in, anything with a number in it, don't give out.
Even a sports team that you're involved in.
Exactly. Don't give out your sports jersey or the team that you're in because there are cases of child predators tracking your child down through the team that they're on. Teach them not to give out your phone number.
Let's scare people a little bit of why this is important. Let's say a child, a 10-year-old or something, is talking online about playing cards that they use. What's a good playing card game that
Yu-Gi-Oh.
So it's a card game 10-year-olds are into. You might want to buy stuff on eBay, Yu-Gi-Oh cards. You might want to talk to the people about strategy in the game. And a 10-year-old might be doing that online, and it seems like a relatively safe thing to do. Well, there's people out there that will go, okay, I can find out some information. So first they start having a conversation about Yu-Gi-Oh and get them really excited. Yeah, I've got this card that's really cool and blah, 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 blah. Hey, this card is really like my sports team. Hey, are you on any sports team? And the kid goes, yeah, I'm on, you know, the jerseys, or, and gives the sports name. That's all they need to know what town you're in. And once they know what town you're in and what team you're on, they can probably figure out what school you're in. And all of a sudden, pretty quickly, someone knows what this kid's school is, which is dangerous.
Yeah.
So it really is important for you to understand that every bit of information can be used to find you. And steal identity is the other big scare. But for children, it's safety in general. And I'm a parent. I don't want to be paranoid about it, but there is some extent.
Be paranoid about it. These are your kids. Right. You want to protect them. So make sure you know, the biggest thing you can do, the best thing you can do is talk to your kids about it. Say, these are my fears. This is how you can keep yourself safe. You know, there are bad people out there. Let them know there's bad people out there, but here's what you can do to keep yourself safe from them.
Yeah. This comes quite honestly from someone who doesn't have kids. But at the same time, talking about the games that you're playing or whatever is a very common, very normal thing for a child to talk about. And it's something that you talk about with your friends. Something I remember talking with my friends. And so, has to say, don't give out any type of information, stifles any type of interpersonal communication.
It's hard, isn't it?
So I wonder, though, is the answer simply saying to young children, you may not use Instant Messenger. You may go out and play with your friends.
I don't think that's a practical solution because kids are going to say, fine, I won't use it where you can see me.
Right.
They will go and do it somewhere else.
Well, let's talk about Instant Messenger. These, you know, AIM and YIM, Yahoo Instant Messenger, AOL Instant Messenger, these messaging systems, are they safe to communicate in? People can listen to them and view them, but normally you're talking to one person. So is it safe to be talking, is it safe for your 10-year-old to be talking to your neighbor's 10-year-old who you know through AIM? What do you think about that, Miles? Being a non-parent.
I don't have an answer to that. I don't know. Like I said, I'm not a parent. I haven't really looked into it very closely.
Sean, your thoughts?
Whether it's safe or not, this is a tool that kids are going to do. I mean, it is hugely popular. If you go into any junior high or high school computer lab, probably 90% of the people in there, okay, who aren't playing Flash games, are involved in chatting, you know, through AIM or through Yahoo Instant Messenger. So if you're a parent and you're concerned, this is a little big brotherish, but there are some tools you can go out there and get that will actually keep track of everything that your child says, you know, everything that takes place during an IM session, and save it as a text file.
More than a little big brotherish, but yeah.
Well, yeah, there's bpsoft.com has their power tools. It'll save Instant Messenger as a text file. Securitysoft.com is another one. It'll do the same thing. These also allow filtering, so if you don't want your children to view certain sites, you know, hate sites or porn sites or whatever, you can set it to do that.
Well, here's a thought,
but you can also set them to where they block. You can put in certain things that they can block. Instead of keeping track of it, you can have it where they only block things like credit card numbers, or they block phone numbers. You know, so any information your children try to give out on AIM, it'll block for you.
We have Thomas of Santa Cruz. Welcome to Geek Speak.
Hello.
Hi, yes.
Yes, this is Tom and Bonnie Dunn.
Oh, Tom, hi, welcome.
Hi. Say, I've got a Power Mac 8500 upgraded with a G3 and over 600 megabytes of RAM. It's a used computer loaded with software.
Okay. And that's a ponderous dinosaur.
Pardon me?
Go on ahead.
Anyway, got a problem on printing certain things I get on the Internet, like I get a PDF or even an email message from somebody else. That gives some information that I want to print, and it'll say you do not have you have insufficient memory to print this message.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I can print, you know, all sorts of other messages with no problem. But mm-hmm.
What operating system are you running on this?
It's 9.1.
9.1. Do you know what version? Are you using ATM, Adobe Type Manager?
I don't know.
Sometimes it gets installed when you install other Adobe products. It automatically gets installed.
Is that a control panel or an extension?
It's both.
Okay.
But you can get through it through the control panel and disable it up there. There is a known bug that'll cause this to happen. When you're trying to view a PDF through Acrobat and trying to print it out, if you have an older version of ATM, it'll give you a memory full error.
How does he fix the problem?
You can get a new version of ATM.
Adobe Type Manager?
Right, Adobe Type Manager from Adobe.com.
For free?
Yes, it's free. There's different versions out there, but you can get a free version.
Okay. So you want to go to it. Do you have Internet access?
Yes.
Pardon me, I have a dial-up.
Okay, so Tom, you're going to want to go to Adobe.com and try to find the Adobe Type Manager, the most recent version of that.
Okay.
And download and install it.
Okay.
Now, you'll be able to get it for free.
Now, if you don't have ATM, the problems could...
Let's check that. What you'll want to do to check to see if you have ATM or not, go up to the Apple and then go down to Control Panels.
Uh-huh.
And then and then go into the submenu of Control Panels or click on Control Panels, and one of them should be ATM.
Okay.
And if you don't have that, John...
If you don't have that, my guess is it's probably a system problem.
Yeah. Now, is there somewhere else that I can get into that decides how much memory is assigned for printing?
No, it's something that the OS works out for you. You don't really have much say in it.
In other words, it set a certain block aside for that?
It takes what it needs. It takes the print job from the application that you're printing from. In this case, it sounds like Acrobat. And it puts it onto the hard drive. And then it takes from the hard drive, puts it into memory, and then prints it. So if your hard drive's full, that could be a problem. But you have 600 megabytes of RAM. No, it's not gonna. You're not gonna run out of memory.
If your hard drive's full, that's a problem. But you probably don't.
No.
I'm pretty sure it's gonna be ATM for you.
Now, the other thing is that you know it's not always PDFs. In one case, a friend of mine sent me just a message on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
With a couple pages of information, and it said not enough memory.
Could still be ATM.
It could still be, or you could be having problem. You know, if the OS itself gets corrupt, it can cause weird things like this to happen.
So how would he fix the OS?
You'd have to reinstall it. There's no quick fix.
Do you have your install disks for OS 9.1?
No, I haven't reinstalled.
Okay. You might want to... If you do end up having to reinstall because Adobe Type Manager is not the answer, you might want to go ahead and go with 9.2. It's the most stable. It'll work on your 8600, even with a G3 upgrade. Pretty soon, though, that machine's going to be more difficulty than it's probably worth, unfortunately.
It's going to be what?
More difficulty for you than it's probably worth.
Oh.
Because upgrading a machine to a G3 is a first step, and then you're not going to be able to run... You're not going to run OS 10 on that machine because it doesn't have built-in USB. So the hardware's going away, unfortunately.
Yeah, but if it does everything you need it to, I understand.
It
does everything I need.
Thank you very much, Tom, for the call.
Okay, do you have time for another question?
I do, but there's actually three people on hold.
I'll get off. Thanks.
Thank you, Tom.
Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
But you can email us, Tom, at geeks@geekspeak.org. Please, if you're having more printing problems, we'll be happy to discuss it more online.
Is this Thomas of Santa Cruz?
It certainly is.
Well, hello, Thomas.
I have a question about hooking up a laptop from a remote location to get on the Internet.
Okay.
And you see these ads on TV where somebody's in the middle of a park or something and they're working on their laptop. I'm not talking about wireless where it's, 20 or 30 feet. I'm talking about maybe through a cell phone, or what's the quickest and fastest way to do that?
Cell phone Bluetooth works pretty well.
You have to have Bluetooth enabled on your laptop, and you have to have a Bluetooth cell phone, and then you have to set up a service that will allow you to do that. Unfortunately, Chris Dumphy, who is our
handheld expert.
Yeah, he's our guru at doing this, because he does it from all over the world. He's not here today.
Yeah, I just got a new laptop from Dell, and they sent me the Bluetooth, and I have the Bluetooth, but it says that it's wireless, but it only works up to 36 feet or something.
Bluetooth is actually closer than that. Well, you've got two things. You've got wireless, Wi-Fi is what it's called normally, and that's going to be a block. Okay.
Yeah.
And then you've got Bluetooth, which is should be only like 10 feet
within your car.
Right, right.
And the Bluetooth, the way you do when you want to have access anywhere, basically, is you take your cell phone that has Bluetooth enabled, and you use your computer that has Bluetooth enabled, and they have to be within 10 feet of each other. And then the cell phone dials out to some kind of carrier that would then give you internet access.
Okay. Does anybody know the Verizon people do not have that?
Verizon's not the one that our geek expert, our phone expert, always recommends, and I don't recall it off to hand. Does anyone remember? I think it's GT Mobile. Is that one? Does that exist?
It's possible. I know they do have the service.
I think GT Mobile is the one. If you'd like to go to
GTE Mobile?
Yeah, no, it doesn't sound right to me.
GT Mobile.
T-Mobile. That's T-Mobile. The one you want. T-Mobile has a pretty inexpensive, all-you-can-use internet access. Mm-hmm. You have to also have a phone that has Bluetooth enabled.
And is what's the fastest connection speed I can get?
It's not going to be real fast. It'll be faster than dial-up, but it'll be slower than...
Probably 28.8 and up.
Faster than dial-up?
Slower than dial-up. Yeah. About dial-up speed.
It should be around 28.8.
It's slow.
Yeah.
28.8. Well, that's better than... Because I talked to somebody at Cruise.io, and they said that probably the best you're going to get through a cell phone was like 14.6.
I would listen to them, because they had more experience in this than we have.
You're not going to get high speeds. It's not designed for it, unfortunately.
Yeah, basically, this is for trying to be able to like download pictures and things like this.
You want to go ahead and go into a coffee shop that has Wi-Fi enabled.
Okay, this is basically you're out. This is like for a realtor or something that wants to show... You know, have people coming into an open house where they, you know, somebody else's phone line. They don't want to do that.
They
want to be able to access, you know, the MLS and all that.
Only sell houses that have DSL then, and plug into the DSL.
Yeah, you're just basically Wi-Fi is becoming more common. A neighbor might have a Wi-Fi station that's open, but in general, you're just not going to have good internet access remotely like that unless you get to define the location.
Unless I guess you go and take whatever's on say MLS and just put it onto maybe a CD or something.
Yeah. There might be services for. I would assume there's real estate services that allow you to download, MLS by zip code area and interface with it that way. And I would look into that.
That sounds like a lot better. This doesn't sound like you're going to be able to get, it'll be forever for to get a picture.
Yeah, I think you're really limited.
Good luck with that, Thomas.
Okay, and so it's T-Mobile.
T-Mobile.
Thank you much.
Mikey, welcome to GeekSpeak. Is this Mikey in Santa Cruz?
Oh, yeah. Hey, guys.
Hi.
Mikey.
Hey.
So I had a question about my cell phone. Now, I've had some problems a couple of times. Like, people have called me telling me that I'm calling them, and I keep calling them.
Do you keep on leaving it in your pocket?
It's not in my pocket, no. And I checked my phone list. Like, I have no record of ever calling them.
Yeah, but, Mikey, you don't remember everything you... just for everybody
No, but I checked, Mikey's a friend of mine, every phone. What's that?
So you're saying that it's dialing people, and you're not actually dialing them.
Exactly. And I've also had it where people have been calling me. You know, saying, oh, I meant to call some number that's not even close to my number.
Interesting.
And I've also had problems where the lines get switched, so I hear people sometimes.
Who's your carrier?
It's Singular.
Have you talked to them about this?
No, but it seems like when I talk to other people that they have the same kind of problem. So I'm just kind of...
Because I've never had this problem before with my provider.
It's really kind of strange. But
I would talk to Singular and say, hey, why does this happen? What's going on here? And if you can find some record somewhere that says, yes, this is happening, like on your phone bill or something like that.
Well, there's no record on the phone bill. I'm just wondering in terms of, like, is that a signal problem or is it software?
It seems so strange to even have crosstalk on a cell phone. I'm assuming you've got a wireless. I mean, you've got a digital cell phone carrier.
Right, exactly.
There can't be crosstalk, so it just doesn't make any sense to me that that's happening.
Right,
that's
I know.
Why it sounds
that's
like
what
happening.
I would think too. Exactly.
I would go ahead and go to Singular and say, look, I want a new, chip for my phone. If your phone takes one of the PCMI chips.
Oh, see if it's like.
And see if they can just switch you out and see if it'll fix the problem. They should do this. It's definitely a phone service problem. And I got to go, Mikey.
All right.
It's good talking with you.
All right. Bye.
Bye. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me are geeks Miles Elam and John Tracy. Grey Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Grey Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. The geeks today, Miles Elam, he's a great programmer and a student of American literature, and John Tracy, owner and operator of Felton Games. Geeks, thank you very much for being on the show.
You're welcome.
I'll do this very quickly.
Quickly.
as an example of an email, just so another example that we didn't hit. Dear user of GeekSpeak or Gateway email server, are any virus software has detected a large amount of viruses amounting outgoing from your email account. You may use our free antivirus tool to clean up your software, your computer software. Pay attention on attached file.
Wow. And it's a virus.
It's a virus. Says attached file protected by password for security reasons. Password is 64658. The management, the GeekSpeak.
Wait, no, don't click that. It's on my computer. Wait.
That's bad.
Right. Look at stuff with a critical eye.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Miles and John. Next week, we're going to be talking about the Webbies on GeekSpeak. Our producer is Maggie Cleveland, and thank you all for calling in to GeekSpeak and being a participant in our show. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KDBH San Arvo. We're on the web at kusp.org. For GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell. Fine Print with Jen Ramage is coming up next, followed by State of the Arts with my mother, Diana Wright Troxell. And at noon, my favorite music show, Two Steps from the Blues with Charlie Lang. And now, Fine Print.